You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Dirty hands means clean theology. Can you dig it? What is going on, all my local guys and gals and long distance pals? We're back.
Yes, we are.
What's so funny?
I was going to do the old pitch. We're back, but
no,
not today. No.
Been a while since we got together.
I almost forgot the opening line.
I know it has been a while. We've had a lot of things happening in the meantime. So I mean, it's been busy for everybody, and in different ways, we've all been back in the saddle again.
That was a horrible horse noise.
We need coconuts.
Yeah,
you need coconuts for that. But
my piano fingers didn't do the job.
No. But you tried. I appreciate the effort. Ben, what you been doing the last little bit?
Well, just got back from the beach. Took the boys down to Florida. Well, and the wife. Went seeing her parents. They live down in Florida. Been raccoon catching, trapping, raccoon trapping. We got a bear that needs shot. He killed like 9 of her chickens.
Sure it wasn't Bigfoot?
Well, I was in the house, so I don't think it was Bigfoot.
You would have plucked him first.
Yeah, I'd have plucked him first. But yeah, we had, I guess, I don't know, 7 to 9 killed by the bear, all in one go. And
he ripped that window out of there.
He ripped the window out of the coop.
The weather's at least been nicer lately.
It has here the past, 2 weeks?
2 weeks have been gorgeous. Been like mid-70s to 80 about max, really. It's been gorgeous out here. Right now outside, I think it's in the 60s. When I came home, I think it was 71. Yeah. But a lot of rain the last couple days. But Justin, what you been up to?
Just working and recording, working, recording. I've been going to a lot of conferences and stuff, and had a couple speaking engagements, talking about the book, and shaking hands, selling books, and recording, man. That's about it. And work. Oh, I just said I hung out with the Riverwinds last weekend. That was pretty cool. They invited me over to their property. They're getting ready to film a documentary, so they had kind of like a work weekend. So we helped out and done some stuff around their farm, and we camped out, and so at night we just sat around the fire, and he invited a bunch of his Native American friends, and they told a bunch of old stories and a couple Bigfoot experiences, and he broke out that Nephilim lance and a couple old artifacts. They even got out some birchwood tablets from the Lenape.
Oh, that's cool.
And it had the creation account, and I had giants. I mean, it mirrors Genesis, like, almost to a T. That was pretty cool.
That is awesome. Absolutely love it.
Someone got a new job.
I did get a new job. I'm actually working in Greenville now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I am. I'm no longer in Kingsport. I'm down in Greenville working, working down there, and it's been really good. It's been a good transition. I got out of management so I could actually spend some more time with the family, spend more time doing this stuff, the stuff that actually I feel like I'm called to, that I think we're all called to some degree in different areas maybe, but we're all called to it. And it's been a blessing. I mean, God really set it up. Like, I literally put my notice in without having a job. And the last day I worked, the next day I started. I mean, it was all God. There's absolutely no doubt. But it's been amazing.
Yeah, he put that 2 weeks. There is notice in. Going to quit. I was like, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to help him go work the street corner. Glad that didn't have to happen.
Yeah, I am too, because I want to eat.
We'd have to pay them, wouldn't we?
But other than that, the couple shows we released talking about this when we were down there in Texas. I went down there with my mom, my brother, and Sean, and we were down filming in Texas for an upcoming documentary as well. And we've got to meet some just absolutely amazing people. The stuff that's going to come out of that, and the stuff that's still coming out of that, is just, it just keeps getting bigger, and it keeps growing, because it's, you know, it's what happens when you follow what God wants you to do, is that things are going to go the right way if you're doing what you're supposed to do. And man, I can see God's blessing this already. It hasn't even come out, not even close yet. We still got a lot of time before this comes out, but the things that God's putting in front of us are unbelievable, and I can't talk about them all yet. But I can tell you guys later. But
off the record.
But I can't talk about it yet, because things are gonna keep getting bigger. There's more that's gonna happen. But man, being able to be have the Texas Creation Museum just open, and literally the owner opened the doors, locked us in, said he had to leave, and we just had the place to ourselves. It was closed. He just said, here you go. I mean, you can't. I mean, that's all God, because you don't just trust somebody like that unless God says, yeah, these people are all right, to this guy, right? And then we did
something about pictures and videoing, too. They wouldn't allow nobody.
They wouldn't allow. Both places said no video allowed. And then they said, no, we had express permission, and actually have sent us a bunch of B-roll of their own too on top of that, and high definition photos and drone shots and all sorts of stuff that we weren't able to get, because one of the places is right next to an airport, so you have to have a license and get permission to take a drone up, whatever. So they sent us all their footage, which is just actually unbelievable. But all the things are falling into place for that documentary. Get excited. What are the chances? That's what we've talked about. It's going to be ground shattering, earth shattering, whatever you want to call it, but excited. So let us, I think we should try to get through 18 and 19 today. It's two pretty big chapters, and a story that I guarantee pretty much everybody, even if you are not someone who's deep in your Bible, that you would know this story. But not the initial part, but the secondary part of this, chapter 19. So we are going to start in chapter 18 here, and we're going to go from there. The Lord appeared again to Abraham near the oak grove belonging to Mamre. One day, Abraham was sitting at the entrance to his own tent during the hottest part of the day. He looked up and noticed three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he ran to meet them and welcomed them, bowing low to the ground. My lord, he said, if it pleases you, stop here for a while. Rest in the shade of this tree while water is brought to wash your feet. And since you've honored your servant with this visit, let me prepare some food to refresh you before continuing on your journey. All right, they said, do as you have said. So Abraham ran back to the tent and told Sarah, hurry, get three large measures of your best flour, knead it into dough, and bake some bread. Then Abraham ran out to the herd and chose a tender calf and gave it to his servant, who quickly prepared it. When the food was ready, Abraham took some yogurt and milk and the roasted meat, and he served it to the men. As they ate, Abraham waited on them in the shade of the trees. "Where is Sarah, your wife?" the visitors asked. "She's inside the tent," Abraham replied. Then one of them said, "I will return to you about this time next year, and your wife Sarah will have a son." Sarah was listening to this conversation from the tent. Abraham and Sarah were both very old by this time, and Sarah was long past the age of having children. So she laughed silently to herself and said, "How could I, a worn-out woman like me, enjoy such pleasure, especially when my master, my husband, is also so old?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh? Why did she say, 'Can an old woman like me have a baby? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return about this time next year, and Sarah will have a son.'" Sarah was afraid, so she denied it, saying, "I didn't laugh." But the Lord said, "No, you did laugh." Then the men got up from their meal and looked out toward Sodom. As they left, Abraham went with them to send them on their way. "Should I hide my plan from Abraham?" the Lord asked. "For Abraham will certainly become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed through him. I have singled him out so that he will direct his sons and their families to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. Then I will do for Abraham all that I have promised." So the Lord told Abraham, "I have heard a great outcry from Sodom and Gomorrah because of their sin is so flagrant. I am going down to see if their actions are as wicked as I have heard. If not, I want to know." The other men turned and headed toward Sodom, but the Lord remained with Abraham. Abraham approached him and said, "Will you sweep away both the righteous and the wicked? Suppose you find 50 righteous people living there in the city. Will you still sweep it away and not spare it for their sakes? Surely you wouldn't do such a thing, destroying the righteous along with the wicked. Why would you be treating the righteous and the wicked exactly the same? Surely you wouldn't do that. Should not the judge of all the earth do what is right?" And the Lord replied, "If I find 50 righteous people in Sodom, I will spare the entire city for their sake." Then Abraham spoke again, "Since I have begun, let me speak further, my Lord. Even though I am but dust and ashes, suppose there are only 45 righteous people rather than 50. Will you destroy the whole city for the lack of 5? And the Lord said, "I will not destroy it if I find 45 righteous people there." Then Abraham pressed his request further, "Suppose there are only 40. And the Lord replied, "I will not destroy it for the sake of the 40. "Please do not be angry, my Lord," Abraham pleaded. "Let me speak. Suppose only 30 righteous people are found." And the Lord replied, "I will not destroy it if I find 30. Then Abraham said, "Since I have dared to speak to the Lord, let me continue. Suppose there are only 20. And the Lord replied, "Then I will not destroy the city for the sake of 20. Finally, Abraham said, "Lord, please don't be angry with me if I speak one more time. Suppose only 10 are found there." And the Lord replied, "Then I will not destroy it for the sake of the 10. When the Lord had finished his conversation with Abraham, he went on his way, and Abraham returned to his tent. And that's chapter 18.
Sounds like Abraham was saying, whoa, let's back it up. Not 50, how about 45, 40, 30, 20, 10.
Sound like an auctioneer.
Let's back, but backing it up, going the wrong way. Let's back it up there. Stevens.
We're going to back it up once in a while.
What's that? What do you call it? Stevens catchphrase.
It hasn't been lately. I got to pull that out once in a while. But actually, if we go back to the beginning of this, I think it's interesting because in the beginning, and I think, once again, you look at the context of how it's stated. It says he saw three men nearby, right? And when he even says, when he says, "my Lord," he does, it's not capitalized in the book. He's just saying that as a saying, like, you know, my good traveler, my good friend, whatever you want to say it. He's just saying, "my Lord, hey, you know, if it pleases you, you know, stay here for a while." And you see as it goes through, it turns. He all of a sudden realizes, or it's more mentioned when after Sarah laughs and it says, "Then the Lord said to Abraham." And then it's a capital L, the Lord at that point. So you kind of see, and I think it's so cool because if you go back through, how many times have we looked through the Old Testament and the other books that we've looked at, and you see where it says, you know, like with Gideon, you know, this man comes and standing next to him. Well, Gideon's on the threshing floor there, and he's just complaining to this dude. He doesn't realize it's God standing there. Right? This happens multiple times. So God can present himself. Like, we could walk down the street and be walking next to God in the flesh on the street because he can present himself that way. He's done that. And you wouldn't know. Because God can hide his glory, I guess, for lack of a better term. But this is why it says also why you never know when you're in the presence of angels or things like this. I think it's important. And you see that God comes with two, who I would assume are sons of God, that come with them, and they go down to, you know, later to Sodom and Gomorrah, where they're going right now. But, and then also the kind of funny thing, I think, is instantly when he says, are you really going to, you know, prevent, or I'm sorry, are you really going to wipe out everybody if not for the sake of 50? And God actually says, I will not destroy Sodom. He didn't say anything about Gomorrah because he knows Abram's just considered about Lot. He's just concerned about Lot and his family. So I think it's kind of cool. God just kind of sees through him, which God sees through all of us, but sees that and says he's worried about Sodom. He's worried about Lot. That's all he cares about right now. And God eventually, you know, helps Lot out. But
one thing, verse 8, where it talks about the food and stuff that was brought out, and it mentions, you know, the curds and all this stuff. And you mentioned Gideon. I'm so glad that I used to be good at putting notes in my logo.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Just because some of the stuff's still here that I'd forgotten. But I had a little post-it note there talking about how, you know, this is another meal with God, and just like Melchizedek and with Gideon, the bread and the wine comes out. But here in my notes it says, he was repeating the acts of Abraham when he met the angel of the Lord in Genesis 18. Gideon's ephah of flour was 22 liters, 5 gallons of flour. Abraham's 3 sheaves of flour was 22 liters also. This was a kingly feast. Abraham also had the meal under the tree. Gideon brought his under the terebinth. The only difference is God consumes it with fire rather than sitting down and eating it like he did with Abraham.
The part of that you see, and I mean, this verse, and it may be for a selfish reason, but what does he do? He goes and gets the most tender calf and brings it, and God eats that. That makes me think that we got steak in heaven. I mean, come on. Like, that sounds awesome. That's a little selfish on me, but
ribeyes.
There's ribeyes in heaven. Mm. I would say that in heaven, even the top round tastes like the best ribeye you've ever had. But anyway, mm-hmm. I just you see that multiple times, and where you see, they'll sit down. God or the angels will sit down and eat a meal. They take in sustenance, like it's not just. Like, you know, it's not just a ritualistic thing, like, you know, the whole idea of the Last Supper, you know, when we say, you know, it's, you know, symbolically take this bread, take this wine, you know, it's is my body, this is my blood. No, this is, they're actually sitting down and truly eating that meal.
Yeah, there's a physicality to them when they come here. They eat, they drink, they sleep, and if we take Genesis 6 at face value, they can breed. It's like they're, it mentions in Genesis, or not in Genesis, I can't remember, it's somewhere in the New Testament because it was Greek, but they talked about the light body or the spirit body. It talked about the orchitarian, like they shedded that to come in here into our physical world, and you see that time and time again.
So do you think now, do you think that when, say, we're in heaven, you know, it says that, you know, we've been made in the image of God, and we could say that, and we can look at that on a spiritual level, like a more metaphysical level. We can look at that on, or we can look at truly on a physical plane and see that when angels show up, they look like men. You know, when the fallen angels came, they procreated with women. So they had similar abilities that we have. So it makes you think, is it a, because we really don't know. I mean, you see other things about angels, like in Ezekiel, you know, the wheels within wheels and eyes on everything. And you see like the four living creatures and you see this, you know, there's different heads on each side. But is that one state of being, or do they take on, like, that's their glorified state, and then they have like a earthly state? You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm really just throwing that out there for conjecture, because
it's kind of like a chameleon in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that too, and I think it's a possibility that all the different subset classes you have, you know, have different forms. You know, the seraphim angels, they're described as burning and eyes shining like fire, and all these just different classes of angels are all kind of described differently. But like when you hear the word angel, you know, that's the job title, the messengers. So maybe the messengers of God, since they're sending messages to Earth, look like us. Maybe.
It makes you wonder. I don't know. It's interesting. But I mean, like you said, you can never put God in a box. God can do whatever he wants to do, obviously. You know, we it's such a, the one thing I will say about that is I feel like that's a Christian cop-out sometimes. You know, we use that, even though I know it's true, even though I know God can do whatever he wants to do. But that's why I think it's so important that you're in your Bible and looking at these things, because if you just say, well, God can do whatever. Well, it's true, but it makes you look a little ignorant if you can't look and give some example. Well, look at what God did here. Look at what God did here. Because if you just, I mean, that's just saying like, well, you could be on the other side of it and say, well, the world was created with a big bang. Well, you can't show me, but it happened. It was here. It was there. It was there.
Lazy.
It's a lazy argument.
Yep. It's the glory of God to conceal a thing, but the glory of kings to search things out.
Proverbs 25:2.
I kind of look at it almost in a way of they can take on different forms, whatever benefits them. You know, like you're talking about Genesis 6, they come down, you know, look like humans, obviously.
I hope none of them's never taken the form of one of my meat chickens.
Yeah, I would. Uh-oh. Killed some angels. Oh, man. But, you know, it's like you're saying, putting God in a box. He created something. It doesn't mean they have to have, you know, we don't know, because our mind, everything's in a single form, whatever that might be, a chicken, a person, a dog, a cat. It can't turn into another form. But that doesn't mean, air quotation, angels, the Elohim, can't be different things or in different forms, you know, depending on the need that God sent them down to do, or as the fallen, they come down to do for themselves.
Which I think is more interesting, because you see that they do change form when they procreate. And we've talked about that before. You obviously, you look at the book of Enoch and we see that they turn into giants, right? Their offspring, their progeny. And I truly believe, and I'll stand on this hill and until we get up there, but I truly believe when we look back at the Greek myths, when you look at minotaurs, centaurs, when you look at the book of Enoch, the book of giants, the book of Jasher, and it talks about the breeding with angels and animals.
Just look at Egypt.
Sin against the beasts of the air, yeah, or beasts of the field and birds of the air.
I mean, even look at Egypt, all the Sphinx and the bird head and the man with the bird head or whatever it is.
Or the Apkallu,
like
the half fish, half men.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those. It's a human brain thinking. Who would just all of a sudden make this up and then it's some mythical, you know, creation? It's like the dragons. You know, people say, oh, dragons weren't real. Well, how come if they weren't real, how come were there dragons in different cultures that never met each other have cave paintings of dragons or similar look of dragons? You know, just like I was telling you before reading the Sackett's, the Louis L'Amour books, in one of them, one of the Sackett boys is talking to an Indian, and he's talking about the woolly mammoth, you know, but him being, his dad was from Europe, come over here, he's never seen a woolly mammoth. All he knows is elephants in Africa or India and stuff. And, you know, just because you didn't see it or it's in a different continent, different atmosphere, they're going to, they look, I mean, obviously an elephant and a mammoth, woolly mammoth are practically the same, except the woolly mammoth was in the Arctic-ish with long hair, where the normal elephant that we know of today is not. You know, and it's just kind of one of those, how can you say, oh, that's fake or whatever else? I know that was a long time.
No, I agree with you, because if you look at, even we talk about the word dinosaur, right? And dinosaur, the word terrible lizard was made up in the 1800s. That's where it came from. Before that, what did they call them? And the thing is, it just goes to show you that they lived alongside man, because we see that in paintings. We see that on the temple in Ta Prohm, in where they have the Stegosaurus on the side of the temple, on that pillar, where we see different cave paintings, different pictures that have.
The Ishtar Gate has them.
They're everywhere. They're all over
Inca
the place.
Inca stones, yeah.
And you see them. People obviously interacted with them, and I think people still do to this day, but that's a whole other story for a whole other day.
Well, I think on that case, it's more, I mean, they say alligators are from that time, you know, from ancient whatever. They're offsprings of, I mean, if the atmosphere changed, you know, from the flood, if, and they might have got wiped out during the flood, you know, and that's how come you find big piles, they say a tar pit, they all got stuck in it or whatever. But it's same with like my idea of the dragons. And you know, because you have your knight, you know, your shining knight to go marry off the princess. Well, to marry the princess, the king says, whoever kills the dragon that's eating our all of our game, then you can have my daughter for a bride, whatever. They were scared of it, and they killed them all. You know, as weapons and everything else, they learned how to do all this stuff. I mean, a T-Rex or whatever else, they're way bigger than you are. You're going to be terrified of them. Meat, you got to survive. Why kill 20 deer when you can kill one dinosaur and feed the whole clan or whatever you got? I mean, that's the way I think they all died. Just like the buffalo. You know, we wanted them for their hides and also they killed them to pretty much starve the Indians out.
So the if you go into the Apocrypha and you look at the story, which is one of my favorites, is Bel and the Dragon, right? And that's actually some sects of the church keep that as Daniel 14. They actually keep that as one of the chapters of Daniel. And it's Daniel and, was it Cyrus? I can't remember. One of the kings of Babylon.
Was it Nebuchadnezzar?
I don't think it was Nebuchadnezzar. I can't remember. It might have been. I really have to look, but I can't remember. But he's sitting there, and he's with this king. They're first talking about, I think it was Dagon, and he goes in and he said, look, we give all this food to Dagon. We put it here in this pit and cover it up, and the next morning, all the food's gone. Dagon eats it. He's like, eh, look at all those shoe prints on the ground down there. And he goes and finds out it's all these priests and their families going there at night, and they eat all the finest foods and all that stuff because it's offerings to Dagon. Well, he goes then, okay, maybe that's just stone, but look at this. And he takes him to this cave where there's this dragon. And he says, you can't possibly tell me this is a living thing, that this is not a god. And Daniel makes up this concoction, and I can't remember exactly what he made it out of. He makes it this concoction and gives it, it feeds it to this thing and eats it, and it kills it. And he goes, so that's your god?
It's dead.
It's dead. It's just flesh. There's nothing there. And it's such a cool story, but you see again the use of dragon. And I'd have to go back and look at the history and why that was taken out of the text. But I think that at some points people take that out of the text because it's uncomfortable. It's the same reason when you read Job 40 and 41 and they say, Behemoth and Leviathan, which I know some people want to refer to those as something totally separate, and they look at that as a mythological or more of a symbolic type thing, which I don't believe to be true. But when you look at those things, when you look at the little, you know, have little asterisks next to it, you look in the bottom and they look at Behemoth, who had a tail like a cedar, and it says that he is maybe an elephant or a hippo. I don't know if you've ever seen a tail of an elephant or a hippo.
They're small.
They're not a cedar.
No.
So you got to take these things in context. Read the Bible for what it is. Don't try to put it into your context. Read it for what it is, because it has the truth in it. But anyway, we just totally went way off. Anyway, hey. Sarah's going to have a son. Did you know that?
A son.
And she laughed about it.
But then she lied. Said, I wasn't laughing.
She lied to God. Well, we've all done that in one way or another.
True.
But.
Numerous times.
But when you have God literally say right back to you, no, you did laugh. Ooh, I can't believe the conviction she probably felt in that moment.
It was a joke.
Yeah.
Like all them.
I was being sarcastic. Anyway, very end of this, I think it's important to look at this too, is as he goes down and he's taking that down to the different, like, there's, oh, how about 20? How about 10? You know, he gets down to 10 and God leaves. So we know from the text that there was at least 4 people there, because Lot, his wife, and his daughters. But there wasn't 10 people in an entire city that God would deem righteous. And I mean, if you think about the things that were happening in that town, and just from what's said about the town and what was happening and what they attempted to do to 2 angels, look around the world today. Look at some of these larger, look at New York, look at LA, and I mean, I'm not saying any one place is technically better. I'm sure there's great Christian people in every city around this country. I'm sure there is. But when you look at the evil and you look at the dark.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And you look at the heaviness. And I'm telling you, last time I was in New York, there was a weight on my shoulders the entire time I was there. I could feel it. It's a very, I mean, I pray for those pastors, for the people, the religious people up there, the people who are pushing God's word up there, because the spiritual attacks in a place like that are insane. The weight of that city was so much evil in that city. And I guarantee you, go to LA, it might be just as worse, if not worse. It would be just as bad, if not worse. And you see that stuff with places that have a lot of money, things like that. You know, God always says, you know, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. When you're of the world, there is a lot of evil things out there that'll trap you. And it is a very scary thing that I'm seeing across the country. And you're seeing here in this entire city where Lot lived. And I would think Lot's with Abraham, right? You know, he's been raised in God's ways and all these different things. If that's the truth, they're seeing him practice. They're seeing how he acts. You know, he's bearing good fruits. And the people there are still so corrupt that no one's listening to him. No one's listening to his witness or his testimony, whatever you want to call it. No one's listening to what he's saying. And they're still that corrupt. Can't imagine the weight he felt living in that city. But anyway, that's my soapbox there. Anything else on 18?
Nah. I just had one. I had a little note on. Where's that?
Sorry, we jumped around on that.
Verse 21. He says, "I will go down to see." That's the same terminology used at the event of the Tower of Babel when God came down. Mm-hmm. So, God came down again, and they used the same terminology. So maybe it was kind of like a law of first mention kind of thing. The writers were pointing, you know, to the Tower of Babel.
Now that's interesting too, because I mean, God doesn't need to see; He knows. He can see from, you know, if we're His footstool, He can see everything that's happening down here. So what has to happen for God to go directly to that place to say that? What is that terminology? What does He mean by that? Because it's not that He, you know,
He's directly intervening instead of, you know, indirectly working through humanity, or how He would go through Nebuchadnezzar to discipline His children. Mm-hmm. You know, God worked through all these other people, but there's a few instances where God comes down and deals with them Himself.
Just puts the foot down.
That, and I wonder if it's almost like, okay, I wonder, you know, it's kind of like when the boss away, everybody plays. Well, all right, I'm going to go down and see myself, see what they do. See if they,
undercover boss.
Oh,
undercover.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
God's here. We better straighten up. Or do they just continue on like, whatever, dude, I'm done.
But it makes me wonder, because there's a couple times this happens, right, where you have a couple angels roll around. I mean, more than a couple times in the Bible. And sometimes they realize right away that it's an angel. They see something about them, something different. They know they're an angel. There's something physical about them they see, whether they're glowing or whatever. You know, they have wings. You know, yeah. Who knows? But they see something, and they're like, that's angelic. That's from heaven. But a lot of the time, actually, I'd say most of the time when they show up, at first it's like, just a dude. It's just somebody coming up to you. And it's one of those things that makes me truly think about my everyday actions and how I interact with people. Like, God could send a child like that, be an angel, and come up to you that's 5 years old. I mean, the other day, this is a ridiculous and maybe a ridiculous example, but we go, I play frisbee golf or disc golf, whatever you call it, and I really enjoy it. It's actually really fun. Ben, you should play it.
Beta.
Anyway, it's a good time. But I go out with my son Jackson. Jackson loves it. We go out and we throw, and I love it because I love real golf, but this is free. Real golf's super expensive.
Yeah, so, well, you gotta have clubs and.
Well, it's no. When you play, every time you play, it's minimum $50.
Really?
For everything, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
This, all I need. I could pay $10, have a couple of little frisbees, and go play in that, and that's all you need.
In the local.
And you don't have to pay park. To go out there. But on a golf course, you pay for that, you pay for your cart, you pay for all this other stuff. So
I'll go play with you, but you can't tell nobody.
I won't tell nobody.
Yeah, you will. You tell everybody. I've been playing this golf with me.
Beta.
Beta. He's a beta.
Anyway. Me and Jackson went out the other day, and we're on this course over in Morristown. This is a cool little course, small course. And we're playing, and there's a few other groups out there, but there's not many people. And I turn around, and there's this kid that's maybe 6. There's no parents around. There's nobody out there. This kid just comes up and is like, I want to play with you. And you sit there and think, like, first I think he's like, where's his parents? You know, you worry about a kid that young because God, the way kids disappear nowadays, you can't just, you know, you always worry about things like that, because I worry about that for my kids. I don't want you to go up to some random person out in the woods. Like, that's just, there's a big faux pas on that nowadays because of how people are. So if, you know, when I was a kid, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But things have changed a lot in the last 30 years. But we're out there, and you have this little kid ask, you know, can I play with you? And I sit there, and he, you know, we play like 3-4 holes with them. I just, oh, yeah, come on, let's go, you know, and play with them and try to be nice and engage them and talk to them while we're there. And me and Jackson just walk around, and then kid's like, okay, I'll see you later, and just walks away. Is that God testing you? Is that an angel coming to see how are you going to act to just one of my people? You know, especially children. God says, you know, places for children and for widows especially are his, you know, soft spots in his heart, right? is that God sending an angel to interact with you in those ways? And you don't know, because they can present themselves however God sees fit. And I don't know. I just think about those things and stories like this where they first come up, and it's Abraham probably knew who they were right away, but it doesn't say that until it says the Lord. And it's like, okay, you know, and then he kind of calls out Sarah and everything. But in a lot of these stories we watch, Gideon, like you said, Gideon doesn't know at first. He's just sitting and he's complaining to him, like, "What? Where is God? This is ridiculous." And God's standing right behind him. Like,
undercover boss.
Yeah, undercover boss to the 10th, I mean, millionth power. So how often does that happen in our lives? How often does God send things in our way for us to see how we're going to react to the world around us? It makes me wonder. It really does. I mean, I fathom that all the time, and it does. It makes me take pause in how I treat people. When people, even if they irritate me and they do this stuff, is that just a test? Is that God saying, you know what? You know, step up. Don't just, because this person's annoying as can be, don't just sit there and treat them like garbage. Don't sit there and push them away. Don't sit there and just say, you know, not
just
today.
Just tell them that you're annoying. Well, but I love you. With all due respect, you're annoying.
No, never use that.
No, it's fair. With all due respect.
Anchorman.
Or bless their heart.
Yeah.
I said with all due respect.
Bless their little heart, but, and then you can say whatever you want to. It's a free pass.
I don't think that works that way. I'm fairly certain.
Well, it's a beta world.
You're a Yankee, though, so you don't know the culture.
I think the 11th commandment says...
The 11th?
Says, thou shalt not say, with all due respect.
I didn't. I said, bless their little heart.
That's the Southern way of saying, with all due respect.
True. No, that was Talladega Nights, not Anchorman.
Oh, yeah.
With all due respect, yeah.
With all due respect!
You're fired. What? You can't do that. I said, all due respect.
Oh,
good times.
It is good times. All right. Let's jump into 19 and into a story that you guys have definitely heard before. And we got some cool stuff on this too, but let's dig in. That evening, the two angels came to the entrance of the city of Sodom. Lot was sitting there, and when he saw them, he stood up to meet them. Then he welcomed them and bowed his face to the ground. "My lords," he said, "come to my home and wash your feet and be my guest for the night. You may then get up early in the morning and be on your way again." "Oh, no," they replied, "we'll just spend the night out here in the city square." But Lot insisted. So at last they went to his home with him. Lot prepared a feast for them, complete with fresh baked bread without yeast, and they ate. But before they retired for the night, all the men of Sodom, young and old, came from all over the city and surrounded the house. They shouted to Lot, "Where are the men who came to spend the night with you? Bring them out to us so that we may have sex with them." So Lot stepped outside to talk to them, shutting the door behind him. "Please, my brothers," he begged, "don't do such a wicked thing. Look, I have two virgin daughters. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do with them as you wish. But please leave these men alone, for they are my guests and under my protection." "Stand back," they shouted. "This fellow came down as an outsider, and now he's acting like he's our judge. We'll treat you far worse than those other men." They lunged towards Lot to break down the door, but the two angels reached out and pulled Lot into the house and bolted the door. Then they blinded all the men, young and old, who were at the door of the house, so they gave up trying to get inside. Meanwhile, the angels questioned Lot. "Do you have any other relatives here in the city?" they asked. "Get them out of this place. Your sons-in-law, daughters, sons, anyone else? For we are about to destroy this city completely. The outcry against this place is so great it has reached the Lord, and he has sent us to destroy it." So Lot rushed out to tell his daughter's fiancés, "Quick, get out of the city. The Lord is about to destroy it." But the young men only thought he was joking. At dawn the next morning, the angels became insistent. "Hurry," they said to Lot. "Take your wife and your two daughters who are here. Get out right now, or you will be swept away in the destruction of the city." When Lot still hesitated, the angel seized his hand and the hands of his wife and two daughters and rushed them to safety outside of the city, for the Lord was merciful. When they were safely out of the city, one of the angels ordered, "Run for your lives and don't look back, or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, or you will be swept away. Oh no, my lord, Lot begged. You have been so gracious to me and saved my life, and you have shown such great kindness, but I cannot go to the mountains. Disaster would catch up with me there, and I would soon die. See, there is a small village nearby. Please let me go there instead. Don't you see how small it is? Then my life will be saved. All right, the angel said. I will grant your request. I will not destroy the little village, but hurry, escape to it, for I can do nothing until you arrive there. That explains why this little village is known as Zor, which means little place. Lot reached the village just as the sun was rising over the horizon. Then the Lord rained down fire and burning sulfur from the sky on Sodom and Gomorrah. He utterly destroyed them, along with the other cities and villages of the plain, wiping out all the people and every bit of vegetation. But Lot's wife looked back as she was following behind him, and she turned into a pillar of salt. Abraham got up early that morning and hurried to the place where he had stood in the Lord's presence. He looked out across the plain toward Sodom and Gomorrah and watched as columns of smoke rose from the cities like smoke from a furnace. But God had listened to Abraham's request and kept Lot safe, removing him from the disaster that engulfed the cities on the plain. Afterward, Lot left Zor because he was afraid of the people there. He went to live in a cave in the mountains with his two daughters. One day, the older daughter said to the sister, "There are no men left anywhere in this entire area, so we can't get married like everyone else. And our father will soon be too old to have children. Come, let's get him drunk with wine, then we will have sex with him. That way we will preserve our family line through our father." So that night they got him drunk with wine, and the older daughter went in and had intercourse with her father. He was unaware of her lying down or getting up again. The next morning, the older daughter said to the younger sister, "I had sex with our father last night. Let's get him drunk with wine again tonight, and you go in and have sex with him. That way we will preserve our family line through our father." So that night they got him drunk with wine again. The younger daughter went in and had intercourse with him. As before, he was unaware of her lying down or getting up again. As a result, both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their own father. When the older daughter gave birth to a son, she named him Moab. He became the ancestor of the nation we now know as the Moabites. When the younger daughter gave birth to a son, she named him Ben-Ammi. He became the ancestor of the nations we now know as the Ammonites. And that's chapter 19. There's a lot of crap in this one.
Yeah, my first thing reading that was Lot was supposed to be in, you know, this righteous guy, but he was offering his daughters up to be gang raped.
But there's a few things. First of all, when you had someone in your house and your protection, that was part of
the code.
You took care of anybody that was in your house. They became your responsibility. Not that his daughters weren't his responsibility, but I think he's looking at it in the terms of sin, too, right?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sin with a woman, you know, I shouldn't say sin with a woman. I want to say intercourse with a woman is, you know,
natural.
They were trying to have sex. And it says in this beginning, it doesn't say with these angels. It says with these men. They were trying to have homosexual intercourse with these men. They were trying to gang rape these men. Lot knows this to be a sin. He probably knows that this is already rampant in this city. And he probably, I'm just going to throw this out there and say, there's a good chance he probably knew they were going to say no to his daughters.
But, that little limp in the wrist and didn't
and,
want
and
the girl.
Maybe with that, he also had the faith that because he knew who these angels were. If he had the faith to say that they're going to intervene, that they're going to step in. Like, these messengers obviously came to me from God. And I actually, going back to the last chapter a little bit, when it's, you know, we talked about God coming down, go back to Deuteronomy 32, right? And it thinks the principalities are over the nations, so they all have a different ruler already. So God necessarily is not directly intervening, like you said. He's letting those sons of God rule over the nations. So maybe, perhaps that's kind of what he's saying, is that I'm stepping in now because you're not doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially. Yep. But, I mean, obviously, any of that's a wicked thing, and I don't wish that for anybody in either ways, either for the angels or for his daughters. But it just shows the evil that was in that city.
And Jude talked about, you know, they chased strange flesh because they knew they were angelic.
There it says men. So do you think that that strange flesh meant they were angelic, or do you think strange flesh meant that it was the same sex?
I think strange flesh meant they were new to the city and they haven't tried them before. In other words, everybody has had sex with everybody, so nothing strange.
It's like Swinger Central.
Yeah.
See, growing up, that's what I was always preached to. They talk about homosexual, you know, strange flesh. But then I heard Mike Heiser talking about it, and he broke into like the etymology of the word and stuff. And it's been a long time, but basically his belief was it was referring to angelic beings, because he said the strange flesh, you know, flesh is flesh. It's humanoid. So if there was strange flesh, it was, you know, unordinary flesh. So angelic beings are, in the form they come down to earth like this, it is extraordinary flesh. So therefore strange, you know, different.
I could see that, but I'm looking at strange as in unknown.
Yeah.
Like, well, if you're living in a city of sin and orgy central, yeah, as Stephen said. These are unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Swinger Central.
Yeah. Swinger Central, yeah, sorry. Same thing.
Yeah, well, Jude,
but
when he was talking about it, I mean, like I said, doesn't make it right, but I think Jude's viewpoint on it was that they were angelic. That was the thing, because he was talking about Genesis 6, and, you know, he said that the angels who kept not their first estate, mm-hmm, and then he talked about, you know, and just as Sodom and Gomorrah was chasing strange flesh. So the context of Jude was fallen angels. So, like I said, whether this is what this writer meant, Jude believed,
yeah,
that this was talking about the strange flesh angelic beings.
That'd be another interesting thing to look back at. And Jude, that makes sense. I mean, that could obviously be the exact reason why it says that, but it's just interesting they say men rather than saying something more to that effect, because a lot of times, like I said, every other time we see these angels come down, they first are talked about as men, then all of a sudden, boom, people are freaking out like, oh, I'm going to die, I've seen the face of God, and, you know, things like this. When they realize that they're angels, there's something different about it. And this could just be because they were trying to recreate the Genesis 6 to some degree. I don't know how that would – I mean, they're chasing after the gods. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to have that relationship that happened in Genesis 6, the forbidden knowledge, the forbidden fruit, whatever you want to call it. Maybe that's – I don't know. That's, yeah, an interesting one.
And it talks about their beauty. So even their name, you know, hints at, you know, they were sodomites. They practiced sodomy. So when they seen these beautiful beings, you know, glowing skin, just, you know, extraordinary, you know, so they were like, oh, I want that.
Now, that word, did that come from this city, or was that word in place prior to this city?
Well, that's a
sodomite.
Yeah, what's the thing? You don't know. Some people think all this stuff was written, you know, within the time frame. Some people believe it's written looking back, and even like I make arguments that some of the names I don't believe are the real names. They put names to describe
protect
the character, you know, describe the character and stuff. So maybe this city was named something else, but later when the writer was writing it, it was known for, you know,
sodomy.
Homosexual and sodomy, so they just named it Sodom. I mean, we don't really know.
Also, what would it have been like to be like one of the citizens in Zor? Like every other village, every other place is destroyed, but your little town's safe. And they saw Lot run from that city, and Lot's scared of them. He goes to live in this cave.
And there must not be no men there, because his family was there. Then they went to the caves, and the daughter's like, "There's no more men left."
I wonder if
so. It was like, was it a city full of women, or did they just making that up to satisfy themselves or something?
Well, it also might that way, in agreements with that, could be a situation. Or instead of a small town, it might have just been
nobody in their age range.
A couple families, and they're all spoken for.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Or something to that effect. So there's no men for us.
Yeah, retirement city.
Yeah, retirement.
Old men.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. If you had, you know, I mean, if you think about it, I've been in little towns where even the school I went to, you know, there was nobody in the sixth grade when I was there. There was nobody in the sixth grade or fifth grade. When I was in eighth grade, there was nobody in fifth grade. And there's just this gap because there wasn't that many kids around of that age. It was 39 kids in my grade school. So maybe there's just, it's such a small town. They come in, maybe they're 15, 16, 17 years old. I don't know how old his daughters were. They could have been 20 for all we know. But they're engaged at that point. They have fiancés that Lot goes and tries to warn. So they're at least marrying age in this culture. But they go there.
4-year-old's the youngest.
Maybe there's, well, maybe the oldest kid to them is 4 or 5 years old. And right. The next one up is married. I mean, it's hard to say because there could be, like you said, 3-4 families.
Next one's in their 30s.
That's it.
The parents are in their 30s with 4-year-old kids running around.
Who knows? But it is interesting. But think about being one of those, or potentially, was there 10 righteous people in Zor? Who knows?
Once they got there.
Well, he talked like he was going to destroy it, and then with Lot begging, you know, like, oh, please. And he's like, well, for your sake, I won't destroy that town. Just get there. Go. I can't do nothing.
Well, there was only 6 righteous people till he was there.
Oh, he was the difference maker.
He was a difference
maker. Yeah.
I mean,
I say 7 since,
but you know,
God's all-knowing, and then his wife turned around.
It would be super. And Zor is a city that's actually talked about numerous times in the text. You hear about Zor actually a few times. There's times when Zor comes, and it says the king of Zor. So obviously they have a ruler. But there's the 5 kingdoms against the 4 kingdoms, right, that are going back and forth. I think we already read about that. Mm-hmm. And Zor is one of those mentioned. So they have these, but think about it. Like, it'd be kind of cool to see the Zor genealogy. Like, what happened to those, the one survivors in that whole area? Where did they end up? What people came from them? It'd be kind of interesting to kind of see that.
I would say they, in an instant, got the opportunity to own much more land.
it's worthless land.
Yeah, no, I don't think you could grow anything on that sulfur field.
No.
But.
And that one thing I thought was,
they could
really
sell it.
Yeah. If anybody want to buy it.
But powder.
But verse 17, I noticed that it says, he tells them to escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. And normally, like, we read from different translations, but even your translation said that, I noticed. So to me, it just reminded me of the flood. This was the same language used there. The wicked were swept away like chaff. And I kind of had a little note for myself in here. So, like, you want to be the one left behind. I'm not a rapture guy. The wicked
like
are swept away, the righteous remain.
Is it like the separation of the sheep and the goats? Is
yes.
That kind of the way that's supposed to be looked at, right? All it is, the swept away means, like you said, the evil are taken away, but it's down to Sheol at the time, or, you know, Gehenna, Hades, whatever you want to call it at the time. I don't know if they technically would go there. I don't know how that. That's actually really interesting, because when we look at the pre-Jesus afterlife, when we talk about Sheol.
Oh, yeah. It's a place of rest, like a time out.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like what Catholics would refer to as purgatory.
Well, right? They're conscious in purgatory, ain't they?
Yeah.
Well, they're conscious in
Sheol,
too.
Oh, I thought it was just like a timeout, like a rest,
well,
like sleep.
Not if you look at what it says about Abraham's bosom, but if you look at the parable of Lazarus and the rich man.
Yeah,
that's what
they're showing, the divide. And on one side, you have the Lazarus with Abraham, right? Mm-hmm. He's on that side.
No, Lazarus is not. The helper is the slave.
No, Lazarus is the guy that was the beggar, and the rich man is the guy that was on the other side, the bad side of Sheol. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, let me go and warn my brother. So there's like this chasm between them.
They talked about that in Enoch too. That was the, at that time, that was the belief. But I often wondered, like, I don't know, but I wonder if where that was a parable. It was a teaching moment. So Jesus was like meeting them where they were. It's like, okay, you guys already believe this, so I'm going to use this scenario so you understand it, and I'm going to teach you a lesson.
He's using what they already believe to illustrate a
teaching point.
Yeah.
I would agree with you, with the exception of the fact that I don't believe that's a parable for one reason. I know it says, our Bible tells us the parable of, but the reason is because he uses a specific name. That's the only parable that specific name is used in.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Because Lazarus, that's the one he did, raise from the dead.
Mm-hmm. So it makes you wonder. That's a specific name. Is that, and I mean, there could have been 1,000 Lazaruses, who knows, but is that a literal story, not just a parable? But, we reference history all the time and say, this is what happened. This is what went on. And we reference history all the time. And maybe what he's doing is not just referencing a parable or saying a parable, but he's referencing a past event. And to me, because it's a specific name, I don't believe that's a parable. And I think that's just because of how Jesus would approach and teach with parables, that story is ultimately turned into what we consider a parable. Our Bible basically gives us kind of it's not our Bible. It's the subtitles and things. It gives us that context that it makes it out to be a parable. If that makes sense.
And what I think's funny too, how I used the terminology, the wicked were swept away just like the flood.
Yeah.
And that was a reset, right?
Yeah.
Once again, what happens?
Yeah.
Incest. A sexual sin. Same thing that happened after the flood. Ham sleeps with his mother. Incestuous sin to kick us off at the reset. Every time.
Yeah.
But once again, it's the same thing. So this is, if you look at Lot's daughters, they're doing something. You think about Ishmael, right? So Sarah takes Hagar and gives him to, I mean, granted, it's not his sister or whatever. Actually, Sarah was his sister, but it's not someone who is like just his daughter or whatever sleeping with him. But it's something where they go against God, and they say, we're going to take it into our own hands. This is what his daughters did. Sarah took it into her own hands when she had Hagar sleep with him. So now we see that Lot's daughters are saying, we're taking this in our own. We don't have faith. God saved us from this, but we want something and we want it now. So we're going to take it into our own hands rather than having faith and just trusting that God's going to provide down the road, which I'm sure he probably still did. And I would bet that his daughters eventually got married wherever they ended up.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been, hey, we were engaged. I had fiancés. Well, now they're dead.
Well,
so I want a baby.
I'm sorry about that whole Moabite thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's funny that, funny, ironic that every time something like that happens, though, something evil comes out of it. Every time. Like with Ishmael, you have the 12 princes, the 12 tribes that came out of that are the facsimile, which who believe that they are the, that's the birthright, the firstborn. That's who the promise is kept through, as opposed to Isaac, right? So that's what they believe. And so now you have two separate perversions of the same, I have a perversion of the true promise of God. Now you have another one that's on the other side that now is Israel's based sworn enemies. Yeah. All because you didn't trust God and you took a step out of your own lane. This Every other time, something bad happens. Canaan. I mean, that's the entire land that the Israelites going through the Exodus are trying to get through. The tribes they have to wipe out. That's because of Ham. Noah's son created that whole mess because he did something that was an abomination. You know, he uncovered his father's nakedness. I mean, it was a full abomination. And that every time that happens, you see here, now we have the Moabites and the Ammonites. Mm-hmm. Once again, Ruth coming from them, it does show that God can still bring something good out of something bad. But I don't know. I think it's pretty crazy. Once again, if you liked Game of Thrones or shows like that, which all these things happened, including that last part for the most part.
Yeah.
You just need to read your Bible. It's all right in front of you. Like, this stuff really happened.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is intense. This is just like watching any of those crazy shows that people like to watch now. But this is truth, and this shows you what's good and what's evil and why and what happens when those bad things happen, when you take things into your own hands. This is such an important thing to get into your Bible. This has actually been a really good episode, I think. I think this has been good. I think we've really got into some cool stuff through here. But you guys got anything else on 19? Looks like Justin's going through some text over there.
Yeah, I was doing word searches on the names, trying to see if there's any kind of Nephilim connections or anything like that. I dug through the Ammonites. They're mentioned in the conquest of Canaan, and that they actually are said to have chased out some of the Rephaim and held their land, but then Og of Bashan came and conquered them and took it over. And I think it was said in Deuteronomy, it said that when they passed through the land of the Ammonites, it said to leave them alone. So, but I was in the middle of looking up the Moabites to see if I could find anything on that. But yeah, there wasn't anything really mentioned, like, as far as like the Rephaim, Nephilim, anything kind of like that. You know, just it's got mentions about them, but you know, nothing like significant that I've seen. But one thing was the Moabite stone. It was a basalt stone bearing the inscription by King Mesha, which was discovered by Klein, a German missionary at Jerusalem, in 1868. It was 3.5 feet high, 2 in breadth, and in thickness, rounded at the top. And it was in Hebrew Phoenician characters, and it talked about the accomplishments in conquering and war of this King Mesha. Hmm. That was the only thing I seen kind of stood out about the Moabites.
Well, we're just going to keep on trucking through. And honestly, what's funny is I read this stuff, and then, you know, when we sit there and we read this here, more stuff always jumps out. And there's little things and little nuances, and it takes you. And I love being able to sit there, because a lot of times I read it myself, I'll think of something like, oh, maybe this is this or this, I don't know. But I love being able to bounce it off you guys and get your guys' opinions on it, because I think it's really cool when you get together and look at the Word of God, because I think we're going to be able to dig out and put a few more puzzle pieces together when you do it in a group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this has been awesome. So I hope you guys out there are enjoying listening to us through Genesis, even though it is taking us an Exodus long time. But
I like that.
In the meantime,
keep digging.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc. See.